To His Excellency Vladimir Makey, Minister for Foreign Affairs of Belarus.
Госпожа председатель.
Madam President, ladies and gentlemen, I begin with a simple question. What is the contemporary world's key dilemma? I believe it is that mankind fails to follow in its societal evolution the pace at which globalization proceeds. We are constantly lagging behind. Our failure to adjust fast and effectively furthermore generates an array of political, economic and social problems. This kind of mismatch between technological and societal development became a norm as soon as the Industrial Revolution started in the late 18th century. Furthermore, these days it represents a far more serious threat than ever before. The situation is that globalization has been steadily accelerating. Therefore, we've had to adapt much more quickly. We need a mechanism that will enable us swiftly and effectively to address this dilemma. It would be appropriate to call it a new global world order. Today, we can hardly say that we have a global order at all. The notion of order implies stability. We do not have this now. The old rules are not being observed. New ones have not been established. We permanently find ourselves stricken by various global crises. The great powers seek to provide global governance through clubs confined into just narrow membership. Other countries wager on regionalism. Middle and small-sized countries see their rights infringed at every turn. Overall, the current geopolitical situation is characterized by the rising dynamic of multi-layer competition, as well as by the crisis of global governance. What is even more alarming is that all of this is taking place while global equality is increasing. It is obvious that if we cannot arrive at an order by design, anarchy will come to us by default. Let me state at once that Belarus has no clear-cut recipe as to how to build a new global world order. After all, this can hardly be solved quickly and simultaneously. The great Goethe once said, "Man was not born to solve the problems of the world, but to start to find solutions to problems and then remain within the limits of what he can achieve." Let us try to proceed precisely with this logic in mind. We are convinced of the need to move forward, first and foremost where it seems particularly urgent. We should start, in our view, with empowering the role of the state in today's world. The Industrial Revolution once made the state strong, as it did the very idea appealing. Indeed, the history of the past two centuries has not been a narrative of military power. Rather, it has been a story of the growing force of the principle of self-determination, the aspiration of nations to establish their own states, which can effectively shore up the interests of their citizens. No wonder, thus, that in the times of crisis and uncertainty, great leaders of the past saw a solution in boosting the state's role. The US President Franklin Roosevelt, faced with the Great Depression, thought that only a strong state could address the problems of the forgotten man. Globalization over the past several decades, and especially in its unregulated phase, clearly worked to reduce the importance and role of the state. We find ourselves in a paradoxical situation. On the one hand now, global processes curtailed the state's power. On the other hand, tackling transnational challenges that are constantly on the rise and sparked by globalization requires a strong state. What do we mean by this? Well, let us start from the premise that we all live in a very diverse world. Reflecting this range of diversity, states assume very different forms of their domestic and internal organization. History demonstrates that it is impossible to reduce everyone and boil them all down to the same level. We are certain that it makes sense to assess the states, and let me here resort to philosophy, on their content rather than their form. In other words, a strong state is an accountable state, both in domestic and foreign policy, regardless of its form. So let us build relations based on the notion of content rather than form. Indeed, why does the domestic political setting of, say, Belarus or Cuba serve as the basis for some countries to pursue an illegitimate policies of sanctions and persecution against these states, illegitimate in terms of international law? After all, it was the people of these countries themselves who determined their form, and they do not wish any other, because their governments pursue accountable policies. By and large, people have no objections to them in terms of content. The call for a strong state, of course, has nothing to do with a call for dictatorship. Franklin Roosevelt said, "History proves that dictatorships do not grow out of strong and successful governments, but out of weak and helpless ones." The weakness of a state is not only today a humanitarian concern. It is a problem of international security. It is a guarantee that we will fail to cope with a mismatch generated at the global level by the different paces of globalization and societal adaptation. We deem the next area to be efforts to ensure global convergence. It is worth remarking that such attempts in the past have often been undertaken. Unfortunately, the areas of their application were misguided from the start. Indeed, convergence basically occurred in the context of the mighty of the world imposing their own political and economic models on other countries. This was outright coercion. As a result, all such attempts have misfired. In today's world, we need a completely different approach, one which serves the purpose of unity and stability rather than disunity and anarchy. We need social convergence. To put it simply, we must work to create a robust middle class in every state. There can be no coercion here. After all countries have an interest in having a sizable national middle class. History has clearly showed that success here guarantees both a state enjoying domestic stability and in pursuing a foreign policy which focuses on international stability. We're convinced that the middle that brings benefits at the national level can also have the same impact on the international level. If the world has a large number of middle-income countries, it is the best safeguard that it will be truly multipolar, fair, and stable. This group of states seeks neither diktat nor dominance over others. What is more, having just recently lifted themselves from the grip of poverty and domestic instability, many of these states fully realize the importance of global development and solidarity with the least developed countries. Building on this understanding, Belarus is keen to rekindle the topic of middle-income countries on the international stage. Last May, this year, we held a regional conference on middle-income countries in the context of sustainable development. We saw a great display of interest in our event. Likewise, Belarus welcomes the high-level international conference of middle-income countries held in June in Costa Rica. These and other relevant events point to the need for more purposeful work within the UN system on cooperation with middle-income countries. At the same time, a number of ongoing trends work to prevent or hamper the middle from consolidating. First and foremost, in the domestic context, unfettered globalization that the so-called market fundamentalists so ardently carried out served to increase inequality in the world and also to hollow out the middle class. Many in both developed and developing countries are already feeling the political and economic impact of this situation. We pin our hopes for change on the ongoing work currently underway at the United Nations to design a post-2015 UN development agenda. It is true that the world is fast approaching the completion of the global agenda on the Millennium Development Goals by 2015. The key lesson that can be learnt, even at this stage, is that currently, as we see it, there can be no lasting progress in today's world in any individual area if others are neglected. This is because everyone and everything in this world, people, economies, and threats, have become too interconnected. For instance, one cannot succeed in tackling migration unless one addresses poverty, conflicts, and economic, and rather environmental disasters. This view in turn points to the need to devise a comprehensive post-2015 UN development agenda. It is highly commendable that the United Nations and its member states, as well as many other stakeholders, have already been actively engaged in the preparatory process. Likewise, it is pleasing that everyone sees the paradigm of sustainable development as the basis for our future agenda. This is the right approach. It is indeed sustainable development with its economic, social, and environmental components that can best provide a truly comprehensive coverage of global development challenges. Belarus has the view that sustainable development goals should be at the heart of the next agenda. We see the need to develop such goals in as many areas as possible. What is particularly crucial is to have these goals in areas that were not covered by the Millennium Development Goals, like, for example, migration, energy, and employment. We consider that each and every goal must be achieved through appropriate thematic global partnerships that bring together states, international organizations, civil society, and the private sector. A good example of this is the Global Partnership Against Slavery and Trafficking in Persons currently being implemented successfully. We hope that a comprehensive approach to development will help us make globalization more regulated and, what is most important, fairer. After all, it must work in the interests of all rather than just a few. Drawing on a historical analogy, one can argue that the post-2015 development agenda is our own future comprehensive, just like Franklin Roosevelt had our own future New Deal. The United Nations, with its unquestionable legitimacy, universal membership, and comprehensive approach, is the indispensable platform where the international community can reconcile their interests on the New Deal in a proper manner, as well as subsequently implementing it. Madam President, the greatest danger during geostrategic uncertainty is not uncertainty itself. Rather, it is a desire to act in a complex setting with the logic of yesterday, that is, with business as usual, that attitude. We are certain that only by shaking off such an approach we will be able to forge a global order that benefits all people on earth. Thank you.